Good morning. Welcome to Nach Yomi for Perek Yud Mizmor Yud, the 10th chapter of the Book of Tehillim. We are going to be looking at this Mizmor from five perspectives: the overview, the central themes, events behind the Mizmor, and places it appears outside of Tehillim, and finally the some psukim or words in the spotlight. So let's start at the very beginning. This Mizmor does not have a kotevet; it does not have an inscription. That's number one. So we're given less clues about the basis of it or the background of it. It consists of 18 psukim, and in fact it's broken into two very distinct sections and two very distinct voices. The first 11 psukim, from Aleph to Yud Aleph, are an incredible protest. It's a protest against evil. The psukim Yud Beis to Yud Ches are pleading with Hashem that ultimately Hashem will bring back justice to this world. It should be noted that there is a discussion, as was mentioned beforehand, whether this Mizmor Yud is actually a continuation of Tess or not. The reason why it presents a case is because, first of all, it's what's called a Mizmor Yasom. It is a orphaned Mizmor, which means to say it doesn't know how to have its inscription, doesn't have the contextualization, whereas a vast majority of all the Mizmorim in the first book of Tehillim, the first 41 Mizmorim, do have an inscription, do have a kotevet, which indicates that it might have been a continuation. Number two, another aspect of this is that it seems very clearly that this is a continuation of the acrostic. It seems that for the most part, where Mizmor Tess left off with the letters Aleph to Kaf there, we pick up with Lamed, and we have most of the alphabet, which is still here. We have Kuf, Resh, Shin, Taf. At the end, there's a little bit of a mix, and it gets mixed up in the middle between Lamed and Kuf. But it seems to be a follow-on. And finally, the Gemara Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, tells us that there are the 18 brachos of the Shmon Esrei correspond to 18 Mizmorim until the Pasuk of Yanoch Hashem Yom Tzara, and there are actually 19 Mizmorim before then, so which indicates that it must be that these two are one, as the Mefarshim on the Gemara say that. And just in addition, it is interesting to note that the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of Tanakh, does put these two together. That doesn't support this, but it's also another clue as to another aspect of this. And it should also be noticed that the themes of these two, of Tess and Yud, are a little different. Mizmor Tess is about thanking Hashem and praying for the fall of enemies. Here is protesting the fact that they succeed. This brings us straight into the central theme of the Mizmor, which is very significant. The first section of it is really a question of what's called theodicy. Rasha v'tovlo. Why it is that evil people are allowed to prosper, are allowed to succeed when they use their strengths, when they use their energy to persecute, to prosecute, to hurt, to maim, and Hashem allows them to do so. That's the question that David HaMelech is reaching out about and questioning. It's very explicit. And David HaMelech is very clear. Lomo Hashem ta'amod barochoy k'talim ili itoy spatzora. Why, Hashem, are you hiding your eyes when bad things are happening? Because these people are going to carry on hurting, killing, maiming, taking advantage, and they're going to say that you don't exist because of this. Just, you know, this is a question which has plagued monotheism of age old. In the words of Epicurus, the Greek philosopher, in fact, Epicurus is one of the reasons why in the Gemara terminology we call an apikores, is a person who is a heretic. This is one of the reasons, is because of the name Epicurus, one of the philosophers. And his question was the following. Here's how he says it. Is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he's not omnipotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he's malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? If he is neither able nor willing, then why call him God? That was Epicurus' quote. It doesn't make sense. If there's a one powerful God, how could it be that evil exists in the world? When you have dualism, when you have polytheism, you have other forces. You can say, no, if there's evil, it wasn't this power, it was that power. Monotheism says that everything comes back to Hashem. So how can evil exist? That's the question that Epicurus presents. Leonard Cohen's last song, You Want It Darker, is exactly this. This is how the song starts off. If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, it means I'm broken in name. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker, we killed the flame. And the closing part of the refrain is, a million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker. They're all struggling with the same issue. Is how is it that there's evil in the world? This is exactly what David HaMelech is struggling with. But David HaMelech does not end there. He ends the Mizmor with a heartfelt supplication to turn to Hashem that you should change this. And notice, by the way, that all escaping from this terrible terrible question of why starts with an action word, and that's in Pasuk Yud Beis, Kuma Hashem. Hashem, get up. There's the notion of action. Hashem, I'm engaging with you. I believe in you. I know you're there. Hashem, please do something for yourself, for ourselves, to fix this situation. And that's the difference between just leaving it as an empty question. What is interesting about this is just in terms of the superstructure, just to appreciate this mizmor, one aspect of this is whenever one analyzes Lahavdil, a poem, one analyzes it carefully in terms of not just what it's saying, but how it is saying that. So for instance, if you look at the meter, let's say it's iambic pentameter as an example, we look at the way, the actual accentuation, so where we look at things like trochees or spondees or pherics, we look at certain aspects of the literature to help us understand what's being conveyed. So Rabbi Avia HaKohen points out, La'avdil over here, that you'll notice something interesting. If we merge Mezmor Tes and Yud, and it's an Aleph Beis system, the Aleph Beis goes all well until Lamed. Then it all gets completely confused and scrambled, and it only comes back with Kuf Resh Shin Taf. The system returns into the two Pasuk, Aleph Beis, only at Yud Beis, when the call for Hashem is brought back in. Meaning to say, the confusion expressed by David HaMelech is actually experienced or is reflected in the confusion of the actual meter of this mizmor, is the fact that the Aleph Beis disappears, senses the disorder that David HaMelech is feeling in his life as he questions this. This is an aspect of the superstructure, which is why the Aleph Beis goes into confusion for that gap of questioning. Events behind the mizmor. The Radak points out that there is no specific person or event that is given to this mizmor because it is a mizmor yatam. It is not given a specific quotevet or inscription. He says, therefore, because David HaMelech was trying to globalize his feeling of injustice about the unfair foes of whether it be the individual or the nation. Rav Amos Chacham, it suggests that it could be the nation of Israel throughout all of history, where every nation rejects them, takes advantage of them, expels them, misuses them, limits them, puts them into ghettos. And so what David HaMelech is saying is, how could you allow all these nations to take advantage of Israel? That's on the global scheme. The Radak says it could also be, it's referring to individually, a person who feels that they're living a life and there's terrible people around them, and these people are evil and they're corrupt and they're still allowed to succeed. And how is Hashem allowing this to happen? David HaMelech has globalized this mizmor to pour our emotions into this. Just places in the davening this appears, and this mizmor does not appear wholesale elsewhere, but as an example, Pasuk Tes Zion does appear in our davening, Hashem Melech Olam Voed Avdu Goyim Eretzoy, which appears in Yehi Chavod in the Pasuk in Zimra on a daily basis. The Avdu Goyim Eretzoy, that let the nations be destroyed from his land, is another indicator. This might be a more of a national poem. It might be a more national sentiment about the nations taking advantage of us, and this is the hope, is that Hashem will actually restore the land of Israel to its rightful owners, who historically have the precedent there, who are given it by the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we're asking for. One pasuk in the spotlight, just to be aware of, is pasuk Gimel. The end of pasuk Gimel is Uvoitzea Beirech Ne'etz Hashem, that we're talking about a person, to translate it directly, it is the grasping man reviles and scorns God. The person who takes is just scorns God. What does this mean? The Gemara Baba Kama, Daf Tzadi Dalad and Amud Aleph and other places in Shas tells us this refers to what's called Mitzvah Hababa Avera. A person does a mitzvah, but the mitzvah comes to the process of an Avera. So for instance, the Gemara gives the example, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yaakov says, a person who steals wheat from somebody else, grinds it up and brings it and is mafresh from the challah, mafresh from that bread or that dough, challah, to do a mitzvah of Hashem, and makes a bracha on that. That the Gemara quotes this pasuk, Boitzea Beirach Nietz Hashem, a person who's taking from somebody else their blessing, even though they're doing a mitzvah, is considered like a curse of Hashem. You know, it reminds me of the time where there was a fellow at the Kotel, and the note falls out, and somebody, you know, was onlooking and noticed and saw that this person doesn't look like exactly the most religious of individuals, and they couldn't help but peeking in the note. And the note said, you know, God, please help me to succeed at my stealing, my thievery tonight. You know, even the Rasha has requests, but that's Boitzea Berach Nietz Hashem. In fact, the Ben Yishchai in Halacha suggests that one should be very careful if one is in shul in the morning. If a man is in shul and does not have their tefillin, not to just take somebody else's tefillin and say the bracha, even though it's borrowed. But at the same time, we don't know if the person really wants us to be doing that. And if we don't know that there's an express permission, it could be borrowed. He says if there's no alternative, one can use them, but one should ask permission only if one can assume the person would be happy to rely on, and assuming that the person would be happy that you would do a mitzvah with their object and you can speak to them afterwards. Be it as it may, this is how far it goes, how far a person must be concerned not to be taking advantage of other people, like this mizmor is describing, even though one may be using it for a bracha in the end. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.